From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 631, Physical and Virtual Machine Security with guest Ned Pyle. Recorded Thursday, March 14th, 2019. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts LLC. Find out more online at soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. Thanks for listening to Run As Radio. Bringing back one of my favorites today, Ned Pyle, who's it's got to be more than a 10-year Microsoft veteran, and is still a principal program manager in the Microsoft Windows Server Cloud and Enterprise Engineering Group. Is that still true?
I am in the Windows Server Group. I am still a principal program manager. I've been here be 15 years in June.
Wow. You know, I remember our show we did a while back on SMB1. I got to read you this comment. This is from a different show. This is from 612, which was the show I did with Galen Hunt, talking about Azure Sphere and this emerging sort of real professional level of IoT. And this is from Brent Yeardley, who said, at the pace devices improve over time, and related to Moore's Law that Richard mentioned, what is the likelihood that vendors will continue to support older devices in long-lived appliances like refrigerators, which would be too costly to replace because the vendor has moved on to newer IoT technology and abandoned support for earlier devices, or where the feature updates outpace the capacity of IoT chips? I feel there is a need to change the mindset of vendors using this technology so that they commit to longer support periods than they might otherwise, providing for an instance of technology incorporated in their products. I tinker myself with various small computers like Raspberry Pi, Arduino, and Photon from Particle, and so I've seen the API be deprecated quite quickly at times, forcing me to update code. This is an interesting point because, Brent, I think that the appliance vendors of the world understand that really well. And so one of the reasons they're hesitant to go into these mainstream IoT devices is that they do expect to have to support that hardware for 10 plus years. That's just kind of normal for them.
That defeats the business model. Well, the disposable model of quickly getting upgrades and replacement appliances and stuff. Well, I'll say this from the SMB1 side.
Right.
I run into, on my little clearinghouse page, I list out devices and software that still use SMB1. And a great deal of it is around, effectively abandoned in place equipment.
Right.
That no vendor's ever going to touch. And in fact, they don't even like to update existing stuff that they support because their margins are actually razor thin.
Sure.
And any time that they're spending energy on just, messing around with software, that's just money down the drain to them.
Yep.
So it'll be a very interesting. I think my personal thought is the only way that computer security in general and IoT specifically becomes under control is the same way that we made car manufacturers have safety through laws back in the 60s and 70s.
You regulate them.
Yeah.
You make
honestly,
it a requirement.
The only thing that really actually works is hitting them at a state or federal level paycheck.
Mm-hmm. And also appreciate that the upside to regulation is knowing that everybody will comply. And if you don't comply, like you don't get to sell your product. Like that's the feature of that, is that this is now built into the price for everyone. There should be no circumvention of it. And we're okay with it.
Think how bad it is right now with items that do have particular electrical standards, for example.
Right.
If you go through and just look up articles on, cheap counterfeit doesn't actually work USB equipment coming out of, very shady, no-name manufacturers overseas. And then you find out that, there's an entire industry of folks who are just making these, not properly wired stuff, which it simply doesn't work or doesn't meet any standards. But because you've got this, the thing that I really dislike the most about Amazon e-commerce style things as opposed to brick and mortar is you don't have buyers anymore.
Right.
You have just a pass-through conduit of materials. So if I went to, say, a Target or a Best Buy, they offer very limited selections, but you're reasonably sure that it will work and have a warranty associated with it. And it actually has, will answer the phone.
And it actually has a UL sticker on it because they couldn't have it in the store otherwise. Like, there's liability in having it in the store.
Precisely. And then if you go through a anything goes model, the Amazon model, you see right away that entirely collapses in on itself, and you just spend all your energy now trying to find out if the thing you're going to buy will actually plug or turn on.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting time to be alive.
Yeah, without a doubt. But when I think about higher end or, you know, long lived appliances, your refrigerator stoves and things like that, where people just, they're not disposable in most people's worlds. These companies are moving very slowly into this product space for exactly that reason. Like, their customer is not going to tolerate that the electronics die or, you know, are no longer supported and the product doesn't work properly anymore.
That's a good point. You get into the high-end appliance. Yeah. Anytime you get into a four-figure purchase,
yeah,
then there's a lot less tolerance.
Customer for expectations are very, very high. And you compare that to the Raspberry Pi at $35. And in fact, all of that technology is so young, of course, it's iterating rapidly.
Yeah.
There is technology that's maturing. But I do find it very interesting, having talked to embedded folks, the folks that do build these systems for a refrigerator and appliances, which definitely have electronics in them, that they are stunningly conservative. But their custom hardware is now more expensive than the general purpose gear that runs normal with the normal dev tools like your Raspberry Pis and things. And they have to look at it seriously. It provides a lot more functionality. There's a lot more developers available for it. And they are arguably more secure because they are patchable and need to be maintained as exploits show up. It's just got to be really challenging for an appliance manufacturer to start thinking like that. That's a very different world.
Well, there's a flip side. Yeah, there's I don't know if I mentioned it on the last show, but when you get into the actual heavy industry manufacturing mm-hmm. space where equipment runs forever, or even medical fields and stuff like that, the flip side is you have things that run forever and ever and are no longer being updated because the manufacturer themselves may no longer exist.
Yeah.
And you're left with me still having to support SMB1 and let you install it because a milling machine running on a factory floor 25 years later only supports
SMB1,
PC LAN network protocol stuff, pre SMB1 protocols. And I can actually see those in my telemetry.
Sure. No, I
see Windows 10 machines talking to what are very obviously probably something running DOS, where you're uploading to a LAN man server over a proto SMB1, like a CAD file, so it will go and, you know, mill out a hubcap or something.
You got to think at some point the electronics in those machines, like the traces are going to start falling off the boards. Like, that is old.
I don't know. Those things are tanks. Tanks. There's so little to go wrong with them on the electronic side. And then the big sort of, you know, they're designed to have their actual, you know, mechanical parts be easily replaceable forever.
For sure.
So, you know,
yeah,
it's going to be interesting to see. You're going to end up having these things be like B-52 bombers where they're twice as old as their pilots.
As their operators. But, you know, almost every component has been replaced.
Exactly. Yeah. All that's left is the airframe.
Yeah, that's about it. So, Brett, thank you so much for your comment. A Run As Radio mug is on its way to you. And if you'd like a Run As Radio mug, write a comment on the website at runasradio.com or on any of the social medias. I publish every show to LinkedIn and Facebook. And if you comment there and I read it on the show, I'll send you a mug. And I think, Ned, you've got a mug, right?
I absolutely have a mug, but I could use another mug, actually.
Well, I know a guy, man. I could probably hook you up. I appreciate your sort of insight on that particular problem. And I definitely am going to include a link to the SMB1 product clearinghouse because I see you're maintaining it. It's not getting any shorter, it seems.
No, I did add yesterday. I did add somebody who had added SMB3 support.
Nice.
So that was a little bit of good news that day, and then it was evened out by somebody who had just shown up with more SMB1 only. So I was in net zero.
You and I batted back and forth on Twitter about something. I think you were mentioning a physical storage issue. Can you tell us the story?
So, it's a It's I was just on Twitter, just as randomly seeing, as I am and often am, and I was seeing some random tweet. I follow a lot of information security folks, just in my space because it's something I work on and it's also interesting, and they're usually a pretty wacky crowd. And I was seeing a fellow named Tinkersec, who's a researcher and hacker, and he was somebody who's not particularly familiar with Active Directory. In fact, I think he sort of admitted that he had never really used it at all. He was just a general sort of researcher, but he had gotten hired for a gig to go and I think do a penetration test.
Right.
And he had actually walked into the facility, walked into their data center and walked out with a server. And that server contained, he didn't go super into details, but it either was a hypervisor with lots of machines on it, one of them being a domain controller, or it was a physical domain controller.
Right.
And then he, not knowing much about DCs, like, you know, just like a normal person might want to learn, he just went out and, you know, probably Googled, like, how do I decrypt passwords from a domain controller, and started finding the half a zillion tools up there, like the Mimis and all those guys.
Yeah.
And once you have access to the ntds.dit, you know, it's the keys. It's got everything. It's got everybody's secrets for the entire Active Directory domain.
Mm-hmm.
And then he ran some of these tools and, of course, started getting hashes out, and you can run tools against the hashes. You start getting passwords off those. And he was sort of, you know, sort of bemused by his own ease of success in doing all this. And it reminded me how infrequently I see customers and businesses and organizations doing probably – you know, one of the most important pieces of security, which is the physical security. You know, they sit there and they spend endless energy on firewalls and making sure that servers are hardened with protocol lockdowns and stuff. And then you can just walk in and take one.
Yeah.
So obviously when they did that, a couple things went wrong in their security threat model. They, my supposition is he probably just impersonated or got himself temporarily hired,
right?
Like you often would with somebody who's, you know, sort of a low grade evening type worker where there are less eyes on you, of your custodial staff or second shift, where you get some chances to wander around with a relatively high amount of access and nobody's really paying attention to you because they're all super snooty, important white collar folks, and
you're
somebody holding onto a mop. And just, you know, I mean, he left with the rack mounted server itself under his arm. So he also just could have pretended to be a technician or wore a Dell polo shirt for all I know.
I'm always amazed how well you can move through any space by looking like you belong.
Yeah, sure.
You know?
Absolutely. Just the confidence of social engineering is mostly around confidence and just looking like you shouldn't be interrupted right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever I'm doing is more important than what you're doing. Don't even look at me.
So it got me really thinking again about, you know, this, it's not a lost art, and I think it's not lost at all. I think most people are getting more and more attuned to physical security.
Sure.
But there's a lot of time spent on the esoteric, you know, make sure you're doing multi-factor authentication and a million other electronic things, and then you're skipping, is there a perimeter around your network, a physical perimeter? Can anybody just drive into your campus? Can anybody just walk into your building? Can anybody just get near or into your data center? And can anybody get into your actual rack? And if they do all that, was there ever a camera that saw them? Was there ever a badge they had to provide, or a PIN they had to enter, or a person they had to speak to get marked off on a checklist? And it's often not the case. I've actually toured Azure data centers.
Sure.
They let Microsoft employees get to do that. There's one in Quincy, Washington, which is a couple-hour drive over the mountains.
I have been able to tour that, too. And I had to file paperwork, a couple of weeks in advance. You know, if you're not on the list, you're not getting in.
Yeah, once you want – I mean, they spend a lot of energy on training the staff there where everybody is responsible for security. And you know, obviously, for an Azure data center, it's a paramount piece because we have tons and tons of tenants in there, and they're relying on us to make sure that nobody walks out with, you know, with a server under their arm or a even more likely a VM on a USB stick. You know, it's that the double-edged sword of virtualization is it made it. It's a little weird for me to walk out with a server. Somebody might roll their eyes at me on that one, but it's awfully easy for me to wander around with a. I think I just bought a 256 gig thumb drive, oh, USB 3 thumb drive for $19. That would hold any domain controller in the world.
Oh, right. Yeah. Now. And then some, several of them.
Probably. So, that level of, you know, caring about people coming in, devices coming in on those people,
right?
Disposing of equipment. Like if you go to, like they give you the big, they give you the whole tour walkthrough when you go to an Azure data center, and includes going to the where data egresses, and it egresses via a gigantic mechanical shredder.
Right.
There's no like, oh, we wiped the disks. I mean,
oh no,
there's
the disks are shards. Like,
yeah, the disk get turned into their component molecules, basically. Yeah.
It's like it's hard drive gravel.
Yeah, it's really, you, as somebody who cares a little bit about the environment, I find the whole thing a little disturbing. I'm just like, you know, there are some good physical wiping tools that we probably could just trust, but
they do take that gravel and they recycle it because it's almost it's all valuable metals, right? Like they can.
Yeah, the metal is the thing. That, yes, that's very true. We don't just throw it into a landfill.
Yeah,
that would be terrible.
But it is interesting that the. I've found this consistently in every regulated industry that I've worked in around computing. It's like the only acceptable outcome was shredding the drive. Like there's no amount of wiping that kept anybody happy. We could argue about it forever. The only thing that ended the conversation was turning it into gravel.
And I would argue that depending on your threat model, like I own a disk wiping tool that I spent, I don't know, $30 on from a real actual vendor, and it works on SSDs and stuff like that. You know, your threat model may vary. I'm not saying everybody needs to go out and buy an industrial hard drive shredder.
I think it's overkill.
It's a little bit overkill. Or you can also just accumulate stuff in a secure spot and then, you know, pay for a bonded authority to, you know, like those are the various companies that will gladly destroy all your stuff for a fee. I would just love for people to get more serious about that kind of, I should not be able to easily wander into your, I mean, think about a server, any normal server in a data center right now or a closet or any space used by an IT department, it's very likely that server contains lots of servers because it's probably a hypervisor holding a bunch of VMs. And I could either literally copy the VM onto my thumb drive and leave, or because every normal person in the universe, raids or mirrors disks all over the place, I could probably just grab a random drive and expect to walk out with a reconstructable VM or two.
Sure. And Ned, let me interrupt you for one moment here for this very important message. Server and virtual machine security is a great idea. But what about all those endpoints you have, on-prem and always on the go? Can't be sure your users aren't downloading the latest blow-me-up malware or downloading and running the latest game from the Windows Store? Instead of having this fight, again, it's time to take charge with Policy Pack. With Policy Pack, you can remove local admin rights, prevent users from downloading and running Win32 and WinStore apps, and still enable users to bypass pesky UAC prompts for line-of-business applications. Digitally secure those endpoints with infrastructure you already have. Policy Pack works alongside your group policy or mobile device management, so there's no servers to buy or build. Check out the software that enables IT admins to do more and protect their Windows 10 desktops like a boss. Start a free trial at policypack.com. Policy Pack, securing your standards. And we're back. It's Richard Campbell, Run As Radio. I'm talking to my friend Ned Pyle, and we're talking about physical security. And, there's the one aspect of you shouldn't be able to get into the space at all. And if it's in the cloud, I think it's probably physically secure. I even think most contract data centers are pretty serious about physical security. It's really only the company's own servers on premises that I've ever found where I'm like, guys, this is not good enough. The door's not good enough. The procedures aren't good enough. Like we have to actually secure these spaces better. Have you seen anything else?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that's very true. And most hosters, although there are a lot of hosters now, far more than you would possibly imagine, especially in the colo world. I mean, tens of thousands of hosters now. And one thing I would always recommend is if you're hiring a local hoster, they should be more than happy to let you tour their facility.
Absolutely. Yeah. No substitute for an on-site.
Then you'll find out that the facility might just be the guy's basement in his house, and then you might get pause.
Yeah.
So the thing we've done here at Microsoft to get deeper into this space where we found that physical security is tricky, and that the next phase is, okay, you've got all this great physical security. Who's the most likely person to steal your stuff, though?
Employee. 100%. Yeah.
So, I mean, like, what's the 70%? Or it depends on who you survey, you read, but it's more often than not, it's somebody who actually works there. So, your physical security is, I mean, you can have physical security all day, and if your administrator has a gambling problem and wants to just go perhaps sell, you know, your sales database to the highest bidder in order to get enough money to pay off the Russian loan shark who's threatening to, you know, break his kneecaps.
Yep.
Nothing in the world about your physical security is going to do anything. And as you trust your fabric administrators so implicitly throughout everybody's hypervisor stack, as soon as you can, get control of that person or have them just, you know, need control themselves, they have access to all your VMs and your VMs, your tenants, until pretty recently would be helpless to do anything about it, which is why we made this feature called a shielded VM and guarded fabric starting in Server 2016. And it was our first go at, and as far as we're concerned, we don't believe anybody else, any other hypervisor or any other manufacturer has anything like this.
Right.
It's our first go at saying we don't trust the administrator either. So the whole point around it is that the tenants themselves should be given an option to have complete control over their machines, their virtual machines. Mm-hmm. And that way, if something happens to one of the administrators, much less somebody just wandering into the building, they can't just walk off with your VMs. So, which is why we made Shielded VM. And Shielded VM is simply a big system put in tandem with a thing that's a tested thing. We have this host guardian system, which is it's a combination of TPM2 and a service and a lot of security key, you know, asymmetric key information, and guaranteeing that machines themselves, the hosts themselves, are not tampered with.
Right.
So it's not just somebody will say like, oh, no, I've got that. I've got this thing and all my VMs are always encrypted.
Right.
They're always BitLocker.
Sitting in BitLocker.
And that is the absolute minimum. And I applaud you for at least doing that step. That alone would have stopped Tinker walking off with your server.
Sure, you could have taken your server, you just couldn't do anything with it.
Yeah, if you boot it up and there's, you know, you can't get into it, mm-hmm. any of the offline storage without actually having to get past the, you know, security, then there's nothing that happened. And so when I take Shielded VM, which we released in 2016, we updated it in 2019, it's still a very live product. Mm-hmm. But what the key to that was, we want it so that it runs in a few different modes. One is sort of an encryption supported mode, and one is the true shielded VM defensive mode. And encryption supported mode just says we will guarantee that all of your VMs are encrypted all the time so that you don't accidentally end up with VMs just lying around that could be walked off with.
Right.
But the mamma jamma part of the feature is the shielded VM sort of defense mode. And that says that, yes, the VMs, the VHDs themselves, they're encrypted. Mm-hmm. But if you attach a debugger to the host, you can't actually debug the host when the host guardian service is protecting the host from being tampered with. You can't put malware into it because all of its software is measured against signing. you can't put malware into the VM because we actually draw the VMs are created from a protected library with templates. Hmm. And only the tenant, if you wish, and that's the default, the tenant has the keys to build and ship and unlock and release the VMs for being deployed. So the host administrator never has any control over, like, basically tampering with the VM while it's, you know, the source copy so that it shows up with his keylogger stuck in there. And so the really nice thing about all that is if you try to take the VM off the host or take the actual physical host and steal it and stuff, they simply just won't boot and they will all be encrypted and there's nothing to get anymore. And you're back to the days of how do I brute force my way through the true encryption itself? And for that to work, you got to pay some serious bucks or be some nation state.
Yeah. So if the right bad guy really, really wants you, you still got an issue, but
always,
the drive, yeah, and that's always the reality, right? But the drive-bys are out. There's no easy
the
drive-bys way to do this.
Are out. The anything but the most like superbly funded money is no object. GPU clusters are no object.
Yeah.
Type, you know, rhymes with NSA.
Yeah.
Those
the guys that may well have quantum cracking computers, right? Because they've just kept them secret. But,
yeah, but you're not. You know,
but I also appreciate it's like that you're giving us a spectrum here. Like this is no longer an easy take. This is, but the best of the best come at you. Well, you got a whole other set of problems now, don't you?
It would stop any normal red team.
Yeah, in their tracks. I'm with you. It appears. I'm looking at the docs here. It appears very robust. I'll include a link in the show notes. Folks can take a good look at it. This does require discipline on the part of the customer to manage their keys properly.
Yes, and it requires discipline on the administrator side to make sure that they're deploying, you know, these hosts in such a way that, you know, there's various ways to deploy them, and you can have, as usual, this is Microsoft, so we give you less and less restrictive options.
Right.
So you start with TPMv2, but then, you know, we could also do admin trusted where you can use Kerberos and stuff. So there are layers where you can get less and less trustworthy,
mm-hmm.
or where you just want to say, like, I want to just stop the true casual red team from getting in and just walking out easily with my storage. So instead of, you know, making everything like mega uber protected and even the I don't even have access to my tenants whatsoever.
Right.
You could draw back a little bit just for more like ease of use. But we go all the way to like, you lose your keys and that VM's just gone forever.
Yeah, we have no way to get it back if you've lost those keys. There's no reverse on this. And am I really talking about applying this to all VMs or just the critical ones like Active Directory?
I honestly, once you get to if you do the work of building a host guardian service, mm-hmm. and getting your hypervisors fired up, and you do it all in 2019, so we support like Linux and Windows Server 2012 and 2012 R2 and 2016 and 2019. We support Ubuntu, RHEL, SUSE. If I go to the trouble of making it for something, I would honestly probably just say go for everything, because the thing that is I don't like about the approach of only the important stuff is lateral movement in an Active Directory environment or in any environment where there's a lot of, you know, shared administration going on.
Right.
Is if I can get onto a desktop and then I can get onto a server and then I can get onto a SQL server.
Right.
It's, I would prefer that you just go all in on this, but you're right. I mean, there are layers to it. I mean, this will work on any OS that supports Gen 2 VMs on Hyper-V. So you could absolutely shielded VM all of your Windows 10 VDI workstations if you wish.
Yeah.
Whether or not like you need that for some kiosk machine that's just running a banner, you know, in the
it might be a little overkill.
May or may not be necessary.
But then there also is a question of just overhead. Like what are the complexities I'm adding when I'm running this level of encryption? Obviously there's going to be some pressure on the CPUs, but in my experience, CPUs are laying around not doing much.
Yeah, honestly, the overhead on any sort of modern hardware should be, you would see like a deployment time of a VM will be considerably longer because instead of it just me just grabbing a VHD and turning it on, now I'm coming out of this library system and things are being attested. You'll see boot times go up. But all those things are, you know, relatively, you know, once you can see the performance and measure it against your SLAs,
yeah,
it's very unlikely that the performance impact will be, you know, will be offsetting the security
day
impact.
Day out, yeah. It, well, right? And it's also expected overhead, right? It takes time to lock and unlock a door. Like, that's just reality. But we don't go without locks because it takes time.
Yeah. The other thing I would say, just for, you know, the difficulty of it is, mm-hmm. is you're into a system where you're maintaining, you have now our recommendation, you would have a cluster set aside.
Right.
You know, that host guardian service cluster is protecting the rest of the data center.
Mm-hmm.
So you have this, you know, there's overhead and infrastructure to maintain the system, which is extra. So it would be difficult for a very small business that only has, say, one or two servers to go and justify this full mamma jamma. Yeah. But I would still say to them, because I know that they're probably not, why aren't you just BitLockering the servers themselves?
Right.
What I would at least prefer, if you don't go and do shielded VM and you mm-hmm. don't go and do full attestation with the host guardian services, if you get nothing else out of this entire interview, at least BitLocker your servers and their data drives.
Yes.
And your VMs, OS, and data drives, so that somebody has to spend some small iota of energy to get into all of your passwords, to get into your SAM database, to get into your ntds.dit, to get into your sysvol, which somebody released a great little simple batch command that fit in a tweet last week.
Great gauge.
That showed just how to dump out all of the files on a domain controller that probably have passwords in them.
Right.
So it looks at sysvol, you know, looking for people who've done group policy preferences and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's looking for scripts. It's looking for people who have saved files with the word password in the text or in the title. I mean, just like, it's just, it is really like a script that's, it's the simplest of things, looking for the most obvious of things. And of course, when Tinker did this thing and he went and stole the server and then he went and stole the DID out of it, and somebody mentioned that script and he ran it, he's like, oh, I found a bunch of passwords just lying around in clear text that somebody had written down to save and never gotten rid of.
Right. Super easy to have happen too.
People sit around and talk about how I need to have, you know, these massive complex layers of electronic security, and then nobody is just doing routine checks to make sure that literal passwords are lying around in TXT files and yep. that I can't just walk in and grab your server and tip my hat to the receptionist as I leave.
Well, and sweep up copies of private keys before you stuck them away in Key Vault or wherever you properly stored them, because you had to unpack them first. Like, that's what took Sony down, right? Like, in the end, yeah, they had all the private keys in the proper security place, but they hadn't actually cleaned them up.
Yeah,
it's funny how much of those fundamentals are there. How well does this play into the host guardian service and these secured VMs into the sort of just enough administration mindset that I start granularizing privileges? Like, what do I need to? This feels like the high to make any modifications here is where I would want to break glass on a super user account.
Yeah, so there are, you can build policy and protection around, maybe we have some particular way of trusting, you know, within the tenant fabric, an individual or perhaps a pair of individuals inside of the fabric administration themselves, mm-hmm. or you can simply run shielded VM and the attestation pieces in their less protective modes, where administrators still have relatively high control, but where you're ensuring that nobody accidentally desecures things or simply does it through ignorance.
Right.
But the ultimate design of this thing is to lock the administrator out intentionally.
Right.
So, you know, this service, and I know I've heard Dean Wells, who was one of the main architects of it, talk about how they've been working on it for Azure as well as an offering. But its real goal at its highest level of runtime is your sales department controls their VMs in any kind of offline or deployment state.
Right.
And the only way to ever do anything with them is that they're actually running, and now you're just attacking normal security in the system, but there's no possibility of it walking out.
Right. So physical security is still an issue, but given that sometimes physical security fails, make sure it's a machine they just can't do anything with.
That's the gist of it, yeah.
Oh, I appreciate that. This is really interesting tech. It's nice to see, you know, things showing up in 2019 that they think at a different level, that are going above and beyond.
Yeah, I would love for more people to just explore that particular feature. It's been around now for 3 years.
Right, yeah.
It's one of those one, you know, security features in general, unless you've got somebody like me squawking all the time about SMB1 or something like that, features are still features, and people who make security features still mostly just, you know, deliver them, talk loudly for 6 months, and then move on to making their next features. And until something kind of gets into the zeitgeist where, you know, the nobody says, I didn't know I was supposed to firewall off my servers. I mean, anybody who says that now has just been asleep for 20 years. You know, this sort of modern techniques, they haven't reached the zeitgeist yet. So the more I can inform people to start exploring them, the better.
No, and that's why I bring you on, Ned. You get me thinking about stuff I haven't thought enough about and been to put some time into. I appreciate that.
Yeah, awesome.
Ned Pyle, thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Thank you, sir.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.